the OTB Podcast Network.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what do we get, a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power.
Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
You are welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland international defender Gary Breen, opposition analyst and coach with Dundalk Shane Keegan, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Remember, our football coverage brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. You can also watch us now because we're streaming as well on our social channels and Off the Ball. For Twitter, on Periscope, at Off The Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store. Before we talk about the beautiful game for the next couple of hours, just a couple of sporting updates for you. Simon Zebo will be playing in a Champions Cup final. Racing 92 have beaten Saracens by 19 points to 15 in the first of the semi-finals. Dunnock Orion, of course, as well, on the Racing 92 team. So they're in the final, Racing 92, that team from Paris. And just the latest from the Irish Open, Aaron Rye from England was the overnight leader. And now he's gone to 7-under par, has retaken the lead at Galgorm Castle, 7-under par. Jazz Jane Watanand from Thailand is on 6-under. He's just a shot adrift. And then on 5-under par, Ewan Ferguson of Scotland, Dean Burmester of South Africa, and Maverick Antcliffe of Australia. They are all on 5-under. Quite a bunch leaderboard. Looking quite far down for the Irish. And James Sugrue is 2-over par, the amateur. He's in the top 40 at the moment. So we had a pretty crazy situation with Manchester United about 20 minutes ago, winning by 3-2 at Brighton. Deep into injury time, the referee Chris Kavanagh blew it up. But even though the match was technically over, VAR checked around a Neil Maupay handball from a corner. So there was a penalty given. 2-2 at that stage. Solly March had headed in the equaliser for Brighton. So United received a penalty. Bruno Fernandes scored it. Maupay had given United Brighton the lead before the first half ended. Then Lewis Dunk's own goal made it 1-1 at half time. Marcus Rashford made it 2-1 to United in the second half. Then March equalised pretty much at the end. And then United got a penalty when the match was over. So I'm trying to make some sense of that for everybody who's listening. 3-2 for United, though, is ultimately what we found out of it. Gary, United, like, there's something else. What, 9 goals in 2 games? Whatever about people think about Solskjaer or the team or Ed Woodward, they're certainly exciting.
Well, they are. I don't think they're particularly exciting in a way that United fans would want in terms of just being dominant and stuff like that, because defensively, again, you're concerned. I haven't actually seen the game. I look forward to watching it back, but I was reading the reports coming in. And especially in Brighton, in terms of how well they've started, obviously a record points total for Brighton last season in the Premier League. And he's putting his own stamp on that team now. There's young players. Obviously, we know about Connolly there. But they've got Lamptey, they've got Alzate in the midfield. They look like they're going to do very well this season, and they'll be disappointed to concede so late as they did in controversial circumstances.
Yeah, 53106 Manchester United fans, what did you make of today? Are you happy with the way things are under Solskjaer at the club? Paul Pogba, I see, substituted after 65 minutes. Brighton hit the post 5 times. It was just one of those crazy matches. We've got 72 goals now in the Premier League. So far, after 2 weeks and 1 game, and we've got Palace and Everton underway now. So, look, it's just crazy stuff, guys, Johnny and Shane. It's not good for the heart of Manchester United fans. They probably want a more stable situation that they had under Ferguson, but that's now 7 years ago.
Yeah, I know Shane is a fan of XG and all that. I'd love to see what the XG for that game was, because for the greater part of Man United were really, really poor. You know, they looked like they had a hangover in the first half and never got going right until Brighton scored. And funnily enough, they scored straight after Brighton scored both times, which is interesting, because it implies that mentally there's something a bit wrong there. There was no press at all in the first sort of 40 minutes. Brighton deservedly took the lead. And this was a game that was full of drama, because we had a the Connolly penalty decision that was kind of not given in the end on the basis of VAR, that I'd be interested to see what Shane thought of it, because I thought he was a little bit hard done by. I don't think he went down looking for it, and I think, you know, if it were given, there wouldn't be much complaint about it. And Connolly had a pretty decent game, all told. The VAR at the end for the penalty was probably fair enough, to be honest. You know, that the hand was in a pretty bad area. It was pretty stupid by the defender, who'd scored obviously the goal earlier on. And Man United completely got out of jail. But there were patches in the second half. Their second goal was excellent. There were and Rashford looked very good for much of it. There were patches when they looked very, very good, but generally I thought they were listless and absolutely blessed to get a win out of it. I was at the Bowes game last night. It was one of the most bizarre endings to a game ever, but today wasn't far off it.
Yeah, tweet from David James here. Lads, before anybody gives out, it was a penalty. It happened in normal time. United were poor and seriously lacking sharpness, but they had the ball in the net 5 times in total. Well, they had a couple of disallowed goals. We need to see a new defender, not Sancho. And that's the thing. Is a tabloid journalist's dream, lads, that every time I pick up a paper when I'm in here for News Talk Breakfast on a weekday morning, I see Sancho 100 million, Sancho 90 million. And all I see is 6 months of coverage about one player, Borussia Dortmund, and 3 goals conceded. 2 conceded today and 3 goals conceded last week. Shane, yeah, makes sense of that, Shane.
You'd have to wonder where the priorities are, John, because, I mean, you look at the second half of last season, or certainly last quarter of last season. I mean, once Mason Greenwood started to hit that patch of form that he did, and look, I think anybody would say that certainly the attacking part of their game wasn't an issue for them. They were fantastic going forward. They really, really were fantastic going forward, and they've got off obviously to a stuttering start in that respect. But I mean, you look at the personnel there and you're still thinking, okay, when that clicks, that's effectively as good as anything else. Like Rashford, as Johnny says, I didn't unfortunately see the game. I was on the road back down from Dundalk, but like, by all accounts, Rashford's goal was sensational. That top three looks really, really excellent. Midfield three look excellent. Surely to God, if they've got 100 million to spend, then it absolutely has to be spent in the defensive line of the field. It's a no-brainer.
Gary, pick up on that. Defensively, if the Glazers rang you now, Gary Breen, if they picked up the phone from wherever, Florida or New York, wherever they are, the Glazers, and said, Gary Breen, you played at a World Cup, you're a defender. Who do we need to sign? What do we need to do with the defence here, and maybe the defensive midfield?
Well, the owners of Manchester United will probably look at the managers that they've had and a huge investment in Maguire for that type of figure. It was a lot of money at the time for Lindelof. Initially, when Mourinho was so desperate to get him, he couldn't get him in the first window, then got him in the second. And immediately made me think this must be a special centre-half because of the centre-halves that Mourinho has worked with. But as a combination, as a pairing at centre back in terms of trying to win a title, I don't think they're at that level. You know, obviously, if you're trying to win the Premier League title and you're playing for Manchester United, you're judged by the highest standards, of course. But I don't think they're alone. I think other teams are struggling to get the likes of Chelsea. When you think how dominant they've been in the Premier League, it's always been based on strong quality, top quality centre halves. They're struggling for it as well. So in terms of identifying it, I think we've seen what a difference a top-class centre-half can make. I keep saying it's about Van Dijk. It was why I was adamant at the time that even though the fee was spiralling, I always felt, pay the money. Pay the money because he's the perfect centre-half for your team. That's what Manchester United are doing. And I couldn't for one moment think that their scouts or whoever's making these decisions is not trying to scour the world for a centre-half who could have that effect. I don't think there's that many out there, unfortunately, but certainly needs addressing. I don't think Manchester United, in terms of the criticism they get from the likes of Gary Neville in terms of recruitment, you know, he's a serial winner at Manchester United, knows the type of player that you've got to have in the heart of your defence. He referenced Gary Pallister, Stam, Rio Ferdinand, players who can play that high line and are able to recover at pace. And I just feel that that team is not able to do it. And they're as good as they are going forward, I don't think that defence is going to get them to where they believe they belong. And certainly not without a good holding midfielder, because they don't seem to have one also.
Yeah, Matic played today, 5-3-1-6. Amazing to see Man United's sharpness comes from the VAR official. That is from Martin and Meath, an early wag. I'm always wondering, Gary, like, there seems to be a lack of quality centre-halves in the world right now. Why is that, I wonder?
Yeah. I just think that the role of centre-half has evolved, certainly over the last decade or so, in terms of the requirements of it. I think gone are the days of your kind of Tony Adams, Sol Campbell, those robust centre-halves who can the physical presence just staying in there. I think you've got to be able to deal with those forward players who come from those wide areas now in a way that you never did. I think fullbacks played so much more advanced that you've got space, you've got to be able to cope with it. So I think the remit has changed in terms of what you have to be particularly good at. And I think ultimately it comes from how football has evolved in terms of everyone trying to play out from the back now, where more often than not, you'll see midfielders converted into defenders now because it's all about retention. It's all about that ability to be able to step into midfield and make passes. I think the actual demands and of actually being a good defender and enjoying defender, I don't think you see that as much. And that's why they're so rare now when they do come along.
Yeah, we got Pat Nevin speaking about this during the week. Manchester United's defence looking completely out of sorts last week against Palace. And he says the individual talents of players don't matter if the organisation is not there.
Do you know the Wan-Bissaka thing is kind of odd? Because I've got this problem with I don't think he's good enough going forward. But nowhere near, he's not in the top four or five English right-backs going forward. Yet he was a big signing and he has a good defender and he's an interesting player and he can go past people. But that's almost a failing now, but maybe that's enough for him. You just get a feeling they're never going to trust Shaw on the left-hand side as well. Maguire, I suspect, with the right player around him, will be fine. You know, you just need somebody who works with them. When you look at all the great centre-half partnerships over the years, and even back in the day where Manchester United had some fantastic ones, well, they weren't always perfect on their own, but they just worked really nicely together, and they knew which one attacked, they knew which how to work on with each other. They had a good understanding with each other. And it's something that, I'm not just talking Manchester United here, there's a lot of that around at the moment. Mm. You know, the thing I hate most is saying, in my day, we used to do this, and people go, yawn, turn it off. But in actual fact, seeing the amount of good centre-halves I played with, and I mean international world-class ones, they just talk to each other all the time. And if they walk 2 yards out of line, he's maybe shout back and just shout them. And they would just always be in this piece of string with each other. I'm watching so many of these centre-half pairings and you can't call them a pairing. Mm. They just seem individuals who are playing a game. And there's a lot of them. I mean, you've talked about Chelsea before. I'm sure anyone who watched Christensen and Zuma in the game, how far apart they were for the sending off. You think, what would possess you to stand that far apart? There is no benefit to it, none whatsoever. You get close, you get tight, you work off each other. And it's like, I mean, I'm talking, if you played under 16 football, you learned that. And I'm watching a lot of teams now and thinking, you're not doing that. And it's really, and you're seeing it. I mean, I watched the Leeds game over the other day, you know, playing against Fulham, you're thinking, why are you people not working together? And it's a very, very, very odd thing. So, yes, we might mention Maguire and whoever you want to put alongside him. But you need somebody you can talk to, you can relate to, you can understand each other. That's the same with every centre-half partnership. And I suspect Maguire just needs somebody beside
him. Gary, will the jury be out on Solskjaer for quite a while yet? I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be there. Is Solskjaer really going to be the man for the next 18 months to 2 to 3 years at Man United? Because every week there seems to be a really positive performance. They've played really well from, say, January until the new season. But at the start of the season, they haven't hit the ground running. Now, maybe it's COVID, maybe it's lack of pre-season, all these kind of things. But when you're looking at the way Liverpool and City started, you know?
Yeah, I genuinely believe that the preparation for this season is really going to test so many teams. It really is, because we're seeing it. These players, they're so undercooked at the moment. They're not ready for it. Now, they should be, because everyone's talking about professional footballers now are fit for the whole year. Gone are the days where you had to come back and do a hard pre-season. But still, it's about timing. It's about that just getting the flight of the ball and your distances right. All that time does take time. But in terms of Solskjaer, I initially was quite vocal at the time, thinking I thought it was a romantic appointment. Obviously, he'd done brilliantly to begin with. And then the fall was quite vast. But they backed him. I think then they've backed him in terms of money as well. So I don't think there's anything to suggest, even with an indifferent start to the season, that the owners are now looking at Solskjaer. I think they believe in what he's trying to achieve. He's trying to bring back that culture that he had played under with Ferguson. But the reality is that as much as you want to implant the culture, they don't have players of that quality that they had before. They certainly don't have players of that brilliant Ferguson team that I would have played against. So that's the difficulty. And they don't have that quality despite the millions and millions that they spent. So it's a difficult time for them. But in terms of whether or not they're going to make a decision on Solskjaer this early, I'd be very surprised if they didn't back him.
No, I don't think they are going to make any decision, Gary. Just Johnny and Shane, I just don't know, like, when you're looking at Klopp and you're looking at Guardiola and you're looking at Solskjaer, and every week I don't have a certainty that United are going to be in a run of 10 games with a win.
But
eight
John,
them and
John,
two, that, you know?
John, you've just compared two of the greatest managers with a CV that backs it up, and now they're at a club. Solskjaer didn't have that CV.
But this is Manchester United.
And that's exactly, but he's there because of his history as a player. Now, this is why when people start trying to compare him to Guardiola, who's arguably going to be considered one of the best managers of all time, and Klopp of his generation as well, I think they're miles apart.
Well, I can't make sense of this. I mean, I've sort of spoken a bit on Twitter this week about how Shane has gone on a real managerial kind of journey the last while, and just how Shane has come into a position now at Dundalk where he's had such a key role, and hopefully they'll be in the Europa League group stages. But that happened in a kind of a way that I suppose just advertises how erratic football could be. But the Solskjaer thing to me was absolutely bonkers. I mean, if Solskjaer hadn't played for Manchester United, he wouldn't be absolutely mapped to get that job. And I don't really see what his relevance is. Now, I've defended Solskjaer a bit. I don't think he's done a terrible job, but his body language today was almost reminiscent of his own players. He was looking at his little monitor beside him, and he looked very glum. He looks like he's aged a lot, and he just didn't give me the impression that he was enjoying what he saw. And personally, I don't think the players... And I'm speculating a bit here, but I don't think the players really buy into him. And I thought their general body language today, particularly Pogba, for much of the game, I thought it was really, really poor. And I thought they may have left that behind them towards the end of last season. But today suggests to me that there's a deep malaise there still.
He seems to bounce from messiah to crisis to messiah to crisis, doesn't
even,
he?
Even in the last 3 minutes of the show, yeah. Yeah,
exactly. He needs to find a bit of a middle ground there. He obviously had this sensational start. Then only a couple of months later, everybody wanted him gone. Then he had a brilliant finish to the season, and now everybody wants him gone again. There seems to be no kind of ease up or no middle ground with him, really. But I mean, in terms of what Gary was saying, like, sure, I don't think Solskjaer himself would claim that he's in the anywhere near being in the same bracket as the likes of Klopp or Guardiola. Obviously, like, he's so far short of that. And look, again, as ever, it's kind of one thing looking and saying, okay, such a fella isn't a man for the job, but then the next question is, right, well, who is the man for the job? And John, I think we had this conversation nearly a year ago, but like, if Pochettino sitting there, like, if you're a bookmaker and Pochettino takes over Man United, like, you're knocking 1 or 2 points off their price to win a league title straight away, in my opinion. I'm not saying he's quite up there with Guardiola and Klopp, but I'll tell you, you know, having seen what he did with Spurs, I don't think he's a million miles off of that. And if he's out there to be got, you know, I just can't see how they're not at least sizing him up in the background.
We got a goal in the game between Crystal Palace and Everton. Mike Lawrence.
Crystal Palace 0, Everton 1. Dominic Calvert-Lewin can't stop scoring. He scored a hat-trick last weekend against West Brom, and he's off the mark again here against Crystal Palace. A lovely move down the right-hand side. Seamus Coleman cut the ball inside the box, and Calvert-Lewin fired home. Crystal Palace 0, Everton 1.
Yeah, good. What a start for Everton. Carlo Ancelotti. Now, there's a proven manager. He's won Champions Leagues with Milan and Real Madrid. Everton got him. I just think, look, it's a debate you can have every week, and everybody at the moment in life is very much of an instant. There's a cancel culture and fire this person and fire that person. But I just think, you always hear about Roy Keane. This is Manchester United. And every single week, you don't have a certainty is the kind of thing I feel about where Man United are going. And I think Damien Delaney has said on the show before, they're way off and they should be aspiring to have Pochettino or whoever. Now, maybe they could say they had Mourinho and it didn't work, but interesting to see what Manchester United fans think. 5-3-1-0-6, where do you feel your club is at right now? On Everton, Seamus Coleman, again, he's had a great start to the season. I love what he did against West Brom last week. I love that incident with Kieran Gibbs, because that just showed to me that leadership, that toughness, that resiliency, that captaincy, Gary. Seamus Coleman, to me, he should be in that Slovakia game. He should play in that team because I think that leadership is what we require with the Irish team. Maybe people disagree and want Doherty in there, but he brings something. He brings something there, you know.
Well, listen, he in terms of what he is like as a captain, he has just been immense for Ireland since he took the armband. It just seemed to galvanise the whole squad. And he's a real leader at Everton as well. But the only thing I will say about that is he doesn't need to be in that Ireland team just because he's a cheerleader as a captain. His performances without that armband in terms of what he's actually doing at the start of this season will be challenging for that starting place. Listen, we're blessed to have two fullbacks of both quality as those two guys. But I'm not surprised in terms of, I don't know Seamus, but it's very easy to see the type of character he is, that he would roll his sleeves up. He wouldn't be one to go off sulking, that he'd fight tooth and nail to get back in that team, but support his teammates at the same time. But in terms of how well Everton has started, that's impressive. It really is. They're looking to win the first three games of a Premier League season for the first time since 1993. So it's been impressive what Carlo Ancelotti has done there. There's no doubt about that. Calvert-Lewin scoring again today. That's 13 Premier League goals now under Ancelotti. And he's another young player who's just been revitalised under Ancelotti in terms of what he's done. Because when I remember him, I look at him and think, yeah, great talent. Runs the line well, strong in the air, but wasn't really getting the goals. Now all you're hearing Ancelotti is talking about Inzaghi and referencing that great striker for Milan that was all about being in between the goalposts. That's where you get your goals. Don't be in, don't show your youthful enthusiasm by running out into wide areas, going looking for the ball. Trust your teammates to get it for you, in into the box, and you finish. And he's doing just that.
If you're an Irish toffee, you must be happy, Shane, Johnny. This is pretty. Like, he's effectively reconstructed the whole midfield, Ancelotti, and that's now what getting them purchase.
Yeah, I'm loving it at the moment, John. I really am. Probably since he brought out a book. Carlo Ancelotti had a book out a few years ago called Quiet Leadership, and for wannabe managers, I'm telling you, it is literally the best book you can possibly pick up. It's absolutely fantastic. And I've kind of been his number one fan since that book came out. So I'm loving it. Anytime anybody be talking about Mourinho or Pep or anything, I'd be bringing in Ancelotti into that conversation. So I'm delighted it's gone so well for him so far. Look, the signings are huge. You know, they've gone from a Lada midfield to a Mercedes midfield, really, in terms of the quality that they've brought in there. It's absolutely fantastic. It really is. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you have to be taking serious satisfaction from what Seamus Coleman is doing at the moment as well. He's just, you know, the quicker to give the man sainthood, the better, because I wouldn't think there's a person with a bad word to say about him in the whole country. And his leadership, as you say, absolutely fantastic. Johnny will know who I'm talking about. I would have had very similar a couple of years back with Colm Horgan. He would have been my captain at Galway. Fellas like that are just so solid, just so solid. They're just turn up, they get the work done, they drive everybody forward. Sure, Gary has had them, and they get that balance right between, you know, they know how to have one foot in the management camp and one foot in the players' camp to be able to bounce between the two. And Seamus just strikes you as being Mr. Dependable, Mr. Reliable, will always say and do the right thing. And look, obviously it's a bit of a dilemma there of right back what they do, but you can certainly see why the argument is there that he needs to be on the side for the Slovakia game, Ari.
I think I don't envisage that Kenny will change it. I think it'd be a little bit knee-jerk to take off a player that obviously started both games under him, and I think he's a big fan of Doherty. But I get the feeling that Coleman and, you know, Ancelotti are probably a bit of a match made in heaven. They're just, you won't hear a bad word said about Ancelotti, and being, you know, from the background he has, obviously he appreciates a good defender. I haven't seen much of Everton, but it's great to see some team emerge from that. Like, there's a real pack of teams in the Premier League, to my mind, that because of sort of the financial structures of the way the clubs are paid money, there isn't really much between them. There's really much for muchness between about 10 teams, but at the moment you definitely fancy them to mount a strong top four challenge just the way they're playing. And you're talking about Solskjaer. I mean, Manchester United, imagine if they had somebody like Ancelotti, like a proven manager who's done it at every level. And Coleman is a bit of a national hero, to be fair, what he's done. Brilliant character and real sort of proof that, you know, you can develop if you just work hard and live your life right.
Some text in here about Solskjaer, actually. Maybe someone can point out exactly what Ole is doing, because I'm starting to doubt things. On paper, that is a brilliant side out today. All men will be top-class players, and the only time we look dangerous is when they commit too many players forward. That is from Jerry. And Malachy has been in touch from Donegal, Seamus Coleman's county. Ole is a secondary problem. The primary problem are the former United players in the media. They're his friends. When things go wrong, they create a distraction by pointing the finger. The finger, I think, is what he means here, at the CEO and the board. From Maliki. Great captains you played with, Gary, both at club and international level. Of course, you played with Roy Keane. People that have inspired you, like Seamus is inspiring Everton and everybody around him at the moment.
Yeah, well, listen, in terms of Roy Keane, I think everyone sees his performances on the pitch and probably thinks in the changing room that he's like shouting his head off, roaring things out. He's not real calmness, obviously real authority about him in terms of respect, what he was achieving in the game at Manchester United. But I also, as a young player, was with Steve Bruce when he left Manchester United to come to Birmingham. So I had the pleasure of playing with him, another one as well. When you come across people who are serial winners, they just have that authority about them. I thought Kenny Cunningham was a really good captain as well. No doubt about that. And would have been a different type of captain in terms of just helping people out, cajoling them, like giving little bits of information and stuff like that. And that's what you need to change spot on there. If you've got a captain as a coach or as a manager and as a teammate that you know you can just rely on them, no matter what the situation is, there'll be no histrionics, there'll be no like sulking, there'll be no kind of putting themselves first. They just lead by example. And not also those type of captains who are great in front of the camera for the media, or the ones that go around clapping every single fan in the ground afterwards and become fans' favourites. Players and teammates see through those type of guys very quickly. But I sense that Seamus Coleman is brilliant. I think it's been a difficult time for him in terms of being a captain, not only for Ireland at times under Martin O'Neill and the results we were getting, that he always come to the camera, always front up, never shied away from it, but also Everton in terms of some of the bad performances, some of the managers that have come in and the money that's been spent at Everton. It's always him that always has to front up and explain why, you know, they're not quite hitting the heights that's expected of them. So as a player, he's a wonderful player, but as a person, it looks like he conducts himself so well. And he's the type of captain that I can imagine you'd want to run for a brick wall for.
Did you find these guys approachable when you were playing with them? Roy Keane, Steve Bruce?
Yeah. Are you looking for another Roy Keane line there, JD?
Nah, listen, Roy was great for me. As a young player coming in, brilliant in terms of being a captain and stuff like that. In terms of learning, teaching you how to cope with international football, you know, be careful. You know, that obviously international football certainly was very different to the Premier League back then because it was about concentration. You really had to concentrate in international games because you'd be moved about by these top-class players. In the Premier League at the time, it was very much back to front. It seemed more like that, so the game came to you. So in terms of learning about coping with that, brilliant. And then as an older player, certainly, when I was seeing my contract out at Coventry, great words of advice in terms of what my next move should be and to be careful about certain scenarios. So brilliant. And also Steve Bruce, when I was leaving Birmingham as a young player, looking to move into the Premier League, great advice in terms of where you should go as well. So they were brilliant. They really were in terms of that type of thing. But what I want to see from my captain certainly is that they lead by example. And certainly the likes of Roy Keane, Steve Bruce were top players.
That book is interesting for me, Shane, Quiet Leadership. What are the kind of the two to three things you kind of take out of that? Because when you do see Ancelotti, you kind of think, obviously he was a European Cup winner himself with Milan in the late 80s. But you kind of sometimes wonder, because he's not that demonstrative in the media, what his way is.
And look, John, that you're probably hit the nail on the head there without me even answering. That's exactly why I probably did connect with the book so much, because you read about all these different managerial styles, be it in sport or be it in business, but your personality is your personality. So you will naturally lean towards one particular management style. I mean, to be quite honest about it, there's feck all point in me reading a huge amount about Sir Alex Ferguson, because I just don't have that kind of confrontational nature that he has. I don't have that, maybe even the self-belief that he has. So I won't pick up, you know, a whole lot from reading about him. Carlo Ancelotti's approach is very much kind of empowerment of the players, arm around the shoulder, willing to kind of work with what he's got very, very much. I mean, I'm just trying to think of particular examples. There's one story in it there where he talks about when he arrived at Real Madrid, going into the team, and he, you know, he wanted to play in a particular way. And I think after a couple of games, Ronaldo comes and knocks on the door, and, you know, Ronaldo comes into the office and says, you know, boss, I don't think this formation is getting the most out of me. I don't think this shape is getting the most out of me. Now, you can imagine the reaction if anybody knocked on Alex Ferguson's door and said that to Alex. But with Carlo Ancelotti, he kind of said, look, leave it with me. Give me some time to think about it. He went away, had to think about it, said, this guy is world class. Arguably, the number one thing I need to do at Real Madrid is get the most out of him. Yep, I'm going to change the setup. I'm going to change the shape. I'm going to go about it a very, very different way. I'm basically going to go near enough with what Ronaldo has just suggested to me. And like, to some people, that's weak. I think they went on to possibly win a Champions League that year, or certainly a league title. It worked for him. It won't always work. But, you know, I suppose that's why I connected with it a bit, you know, working with the players and that, rather than it kind of being the it's my way or the highway, you know.
Because that's interesting, Shane, because, you know, there probably is a criticism of you that if you do something like that, you're too pally with the players, you're too subservient in terms of what they might think, you're not man enough, you're not as much of a boss. But is that the modern manager does have to kind of be a little bit more chilled out and say, well, I have to respect my squad as well, and it's not like this autocracy of the past or whatever?
Yeah, I still don't know if there's such a thing as the modern manager. It's a phrase I probably even use myself. At the end of the day, there are very, very different personality types in the world. There are very, very different personality types in management, and therefore you will get very, very different styles of management. There is no right way. There is no wrong way. Sometimes a fella's way will, at one club, be fantastic and they'll have huge success. And sometimes he will try and apply the exact same style of management at a different club. Yeah. But because of the makeup of the squad and the dressing room, he'll bomb.
Yeah.
Well, there's a perfect example of that, Shane. Sorry to interrupt you. There's a perfect example of that in terms of Wenger's first 10 years at Arsenal with that brilliant squad. And then he tries to do the same thing with the next 10 years, and those players were not at that standard. So that it seemed like Arsenal's quality really like deteriorated after that. But I agree with there, Shane, in terms of what you're saying about personality. I think as a player, it's very quickly you can realise if that manager is acting or is actually being true to his personality. I think you can see for it so quickly.
Well, we've got four very different personalities on the show, which is a great thing. And we've also got a goal at Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace and Everton. Mike Lawrence.
Crystal Palace 1, Everton 1. Cech Kouyaté with a point-blank header from a corner, swung in beautifully from Andros Townsend from the right-hand side. Kouyaté allowed a free header and cancelling out Dominic Calvert-Lewin's goal for the visitors. It's Crystal Palace 1, Everton 1.
And scores just before we go to the break from the Championship. Full-time's Watford 1, Luton Town 0. Full-time Wickham Wanderers 0, Swansea City 2. Latest scores, Barnsley 0, Coventry City 0, Birmingham City 0, Rotherham United 0, Cardiff City 0, Reading 0, Derby County 0, Blackburn Rovers 3. It's Millwall 1, Brentford 1, Preston 0, Stoke 0, and QPR 1, Middlesbrough 1. 5-3-106 for your texts. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Back after this. Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland defender Gary Breen, the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward, and the Dundalk coach Shane Keegan to talk about football. I remember Off the Ball coverage brought to you with thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. You can watch us on our social channels for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, on Facebook, YouTube, and on the new OTB Sports app. Download that now for iOS and Android by searching OTB Sports in your app store. Sick and tired of fans of the top teams whinging. Man United won today in a dramatic finish. You would think they'd lost. Why not focus your attention on Brighton and congratulate them for pushing Man United all the way on a fraction of their budget? That's what makes the Premiership exciting. No games are a foregone conclusion, and there is drama in every match. What do supporters want? The top three or four teams to win 5-0 every week. What a snooze fest the league would be then. That is from Declan. Good point, Declan, and thanks for texting in. I think we're just making the point that it's Manchester United. This is Manchester United. They want to be challenging for the title if they're the club they say they are, and they've proven themselves to be under Alex Ferguson for so many years. Both United centre-halves were outside the near post for Brighton's equaliser. Wan-Bissaka out of position also. No legs in midfield or defence. That is why they are cumbersome. Good players are in positions to affect the game on 5-3-106. Lads, is it not fair to say Coleman lacks ambition? He could have gone anywhere a few years ago, but seems to just want to settle for where he is. Doherty has been at a higher level for 2 years. That is from Brian. Well, maybe not anymore, Brian. Chelsea, Gary, Kepa. Is it curtains for Kepa now with that signing of Edouard Mendy in goal?
I suggest that. And it was, I felt so uncomfortable seeing him make that mistake against Liverpool, because obviously he knows his place is vulnerable. And when that happens, that's where the kind of like the personal element comes into it. But for the investment that they made in him, John, that £70 million in excess of that, to bring a goalkeeper over and you just have to look at the amount of goals Chelsea conceded last season. They conceded 12 more than they were supposed to in terms of what a builder's routine saves for the goalkeeper. So that position had to be addressed. There's no doubt about that. It remains to be seen how good this guy is, Mendy from Rennes. But obviously, he's got the seal of approval from Cech, who made a similar pathway to Chelsea before. If he's anywhere near the standard of Petr Cech, then they've got a great goalkeeper in on their hands. But I do believe that they have to address the problem. That's the one club that I'm really looking at Chelsea in terms of the huge investment, the players that have been brought in. But I'm still looking at the situations where they are vulnerable, and certainly the goalkeeping situation was one. I think at centre-half, they need to address that, because I don't think either Christensen or Zouma are good enough, like we said about Manchester United, to get Chelsea back to challenging for the Premier League title. I'll be fascinated to see how well Silva does there when he gets back into that team at Chelsea. Frank Lampard has talked about the fact that he's got unbelievable leadership in the changing room. Now, this is Frank Lampard, who would have been around the likes of Desailly, John Terry, Drogba, those type of guys who are real leaders for Chelsea and their brilliant Premier League wins. So this will be fascinating to see whether or not at 36 he's able to cope in the Premier League. I think he's a fantastic player. But I think, as I've said so many times before, the Premier League asks questions of you that no other leagues do.
Interesting about the dressing room there. I think Willian had that effect, and Lampard was sad to see him go, wasn't he? Maybe although it's like he had a really bad illness in Russia a few years ago, Thiago. Maybe that gave him a lot of strength of character. But be interesting to see, lads, if Declan Rice moves to Chelsea, and it would put West Ham in a bit of a pickle.
Yeah, there was.
Well, in terms of that,
sorry, backlash already over one of the players, I think, there, John, wasn't there?
Sorry?
I think there was a backlash at the club already over one of the players.
Well, it was the captain, Mark Noble, came out and said that Grady Diangana, went on Twitter about it, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd say that it'd have them a bit more reluctant to lose him again, so it would. But, West Ham, I think if West Ham were willing to let Declan Rice go, they may as well just sign their own relegation, stamp their own relegation on the spot, really. No, I'd be very, very surprised.
Gary, you were going to come in on that?
Yeah, well, in terms of like leaving West Ham and what the fans are like, we've seen it over the years. There's ways to leave a football club. And certainly when you think about West Ham and Paul Ince taking that photograph in a Manchester United shirt prior to signing for the club. And then, of course, Jermaine Defoe, the day after being relegated, hands in a transfer request. They're not the ways to do it. And you think about Payet as well, leaving in terms of that. But I'm fascinated by how that's going to develop without Declan Rice, because as much as they say you don't allow him to leave, I wonder whether or not Declan Rice will be pushing this in the background, because if we know something for our own experience, if he thinks there's a better option out there, he'll take it.
He's also friends with Mason Mount as well, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was a young boy at Chelsea himself, yeah. So, but West Ham fans won't be happy to think that he's caught in that move. But I don't know. It seems to be gathering legs, doesn't it? Certainly in terms of the whispers we're hearing as this transfer window approaches. I can't imagine for one moment David Moyes will allow this to happen.
Just in relation to that tweet, not unrelated to this about Seamus Coleman, is it not an admirable thing to actually want to stay at the club that you've been at and the club that you have an affinity towards? Do you have to leave the club just because you want to go to a better club? As a fan, I think it's a noble, if maybe antiquated, idea that actually the player would like to stay at the club because he likes the club, he likes the setup, he likes the fans, he's happy there, he doesn't need to move on, he wants that club to do well week to week, he has an affinity to it, so I think he should be lauded for that.
Absolutely.
But Johnny, on that as well, with Seamus, there's been so many periods over the last 4 or 5 years where the new money came into Everton and they promised to be this team who would be in the Champions League. It's not Seamus' fault that it hasn't materialised, that they've wasted so much money, that they've chopped and changed managers so much. So you can understand Seamus talking to the owners and saying, well, listen, where are we going with this club? And then promising him that he'll get him in the Champions League. It's not his fault they didn't make it.
Well, it'd be fantastic if they did next season, which at the moment is highly achievable, I think, because the way they're playing, they could definitely finish fourth. And if Coleman were to play in the Champions League at that stage of his career, it'd be absolutely fantastic. I know it's difficult for right backs at that age, but there are some outliers, and he's probably hoping with that in mind. It'll be a fantastic story, and maybe Doherty would find that Spurs would finish behind them, which would be interesting.
And they've scored at Crystal Palace. Mike Lawrence.
Crystal Palace 1, Everton 2. Richarlison from the penalty spot after a long VAR check after the ball was judged to have struck the arm of the Palace defender Joel Ward. The moments earlier they'd had a similar penalty appeal waved away through the same player, but this one was given after Kevin Friend went and looked at the VAR monitor. He brought back the play a good 40 or 50 seconds after the ball was down the other end of the pitch, but Richarlison converted to make it Palace 1, Everton 2.
I was looking during the week, Gary, at Liam Delap, the son of your former international teammate Rory Delap, playing for Man City. And he could be playing a bit more because Jesus and Aguero are both injured at the moment. Any chance of persuading Liam Delap to play for us, do you think?
Well, does he consider himself Irish? If he doesn't, then I don't want to be here about anyone trying to persuade anyone to do anything.
No, but
what a talent. I mean, you're 17 years of age and you're playing for Manchester City. I mean, amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. You were in that game at Bursa, I think, with Rory Delap, that crazy match in Turkey.
Oh, the playoff game?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, oh, wow. It was heartbreaking, really, because we should have actually won the group, give away that stupid equaliser last header of the game against Macedonia. So we go to Turkey, but it was, but... Rory Delap is those type of guys, when you want to look over your shoulder, he's around you. He's a tough, uncompromising guy, but a great guy as well. He's making a good name for himself as a coach as well. So, but he must be so proud of his son to be playing at that level at such a young age and at a club like Manchester City, because they're synonymous with only the best of the best.
Gary, I'm sure there's a better way of me phrasing this question, but how Irish was Rory Delap?
Very.
Well, in terms of... Yeah, I'm listening. He came into the squad and you could hear him talking about being over in Ireland and stuff. And someone like me, obviously, I'd be very quick to listen to how people are talking, how often, you know, were they going over from England the summer holidays like I was at every opportunity with my mum and dad taking us home as such. And you'd know whether or not a lad would come in and whether or not they had their real affinity to Ireland, whether they believed they were Irish. Rory certainly was one of those.
Just the thing about that Turkey game, I don't know, Gary, this probably hasn't been spoken about enough, but I was absolutely livid at the penalty that was given in Lansdowne Road that day, because I thought it was never a handball. I thought it was one of these stupid, you're defending manfully. And it was in the days when there were different opinions on the handball. I don't know, what did you think of it? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was Lee's Carsey, was it?
That's right.
He was on the floor and he just went to turn over and his hand took the ball. I mean, it was
harsh
at the time, it really was. Yeah,
you
exactly.
Really and you're really thinking, gotten, you know, Turkey 5 million off FIFA, you know.
Oh my God, yeah. But at the time, no money we could make up for missing out on a major tournament for Ireland. We were heartbroken at the time. We really were.
What was the atmosphere in Bursa like?
Oh, it was horrendous because they changed the venue, didn't they? They normally would play in Istanbul for their games, but they took us all the way down there because it involved us flying over to Turkey, then having to take a ferry ride or something. The lads were being sick everywhere on the way to the game. So they obviously had their tactics in terms of what they were trying to achieve. But we felt Turkey were a good team. We felt we should have won, really. We had a couple of opportunities in the game. I remember actually in that game now, Johnny, because I'm not great for the memory, but Dean Kiley played in goal. He was exceptional in goal, actually. He made a host of really good saves. But it just wasn't to be. But we felt we could have beaten Turkey over two legs, no doubt about that. But we look back on, we should have won that group to be the first Ireland team ever to win a group, and we threw it away, conceding that corner late on in Macedonia.
Tell you, Shane, if you thought Turkey, Bursa were an obscure trip, what about an enclave between Moldova and Ukraine?
Quite the place over there now. Quite the spot, I tell you. We're fairly thankful that there wasn't any supporters allowed in for that one, that's for sure.
Where are your share of Tiraspol towels? Do you have them with you there, Shane?
Sorry.
Do you have your share of Tiraspol towels with you this afternoon?
Oh, Johnny, I was waiting for the army to come marching onto the bus and pull us all off the bus at that stage. So it was all we wanted was home, and I'll tell you, I was more than willing to give him my own towels if that's what it was going to take to get out of there.
And for people who don't know, listening in, Shane Keegan is Dundalk coach, who's the opposition analyst, so he knows everything about Faroe Islands football now. I'm sure he's been in touch with Brian Kerr out of Thursday's playoff match, and you were in against the Moldovan champions, and you won on penalties the other night.
We did, yeah. Look, absolutely fantastic night, John, no doubt about it. Absolutely fantastic night. We would have been big underdogs heading into it, very big underdogs heading into it, and I think we were, look, obviously the old phrase of penalty being a lottery, but as much as you can be clinical on penalties, the game went all the way to penalties. I thought we were the better side in the game. I thought we more than gave us better than we got. But when they went to penalties, five of the best penalties you'll see, gave their poor keeper no chance whatsoever. And we go marching on to, as you say, playing against KI Klasnik in the Aviva this Thursday night. Win that one and we're into the group stages of the Europa League, which would be absolutely fantastic for Irish football.
It's probably something that needs to be said as well, JD, as much as, you know, we're all kind of, I suppose, confident that Ireland will, that the Irish team will get through. I saw a Faroese team play up in Ballymena there last season, and the achievement of a team from the Faroe Islands to get this far, like, I think the Faroe Islands is about 50,000 people, something like that. The quality of their players, and it wouldn't be out of sync with what Iceland has achieved. It's absolutely phenomenal. Like, 50,000 people, what's that, the size of, like, a small rural Irish town, and they will fancy their chance against Dundalk. They'll have no fear as well, and because they've battered like a team from Georgia with a great pedigree. And I think the achievement is just, if you see their little stadium, it's really idyllic, and it's just what they've achieved is utterly phenomenal. Like, I think it's billion to one. So
okay, got to take a break.
Sounds like Johnny's up for them.
Yeah, well, no, I'm sure he's not. He's a lily white next Thursday. So Shane, Johnny, Gary, speak to you after the break. We've got to take a break here on Off the Ball Saturday. We got a half time from the Palace Everton game with Mike Lawrence.
Crystal Palace 1, Everton 2, an action-packed first half between two sides defending 100% records at the start of the season. Dominic Calvert-Lewin put the visitors ahead after 10 minutes, connecting with Seamus Coleman's cross. Cech Coyote levelled from a close-range header from an Andros Townsend corner. VAR then came into play, awarding Everton a spot kick after the ball was judged to have hit the arm of Palace defender Joel Ward. Richarlison coolly slotted home. Crystal Palace 1, Everton 2.
And earlier on, Manchester United beat Brighton by 3-2 at the Amex. Just three at the top of the Irish Open. Jane Watanand, Jazz Jane Watanand, Maverick Ancliffe and Aaron Rye all on 7-under par. Back after the news, don't go away. Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland international Gary Breen, the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward, and the Dundalk coach Shane Keegan. Remember, our football coverage brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunluie.net. You can text us on 53106 about the beautiful game. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. Just the latest scores to hand in the Premier League. Crystal Palace 1, Everton 2 at half-time. Dominic Calvert-Lewin with his fifth goal in three games for the Toffees. Richarlison also on the mark for them. Kouyaté scored the Palace goal. Earlier it ended Brighton 2, Manchester United 3. Bruno Fernandes with a penalty. The game was actually over, but there was a VAR call on an incident just before the referee blew the full-time whistle. So it was called back and Fernandes scored the penalty. So United with their first win of the season. Scores in the Championship are full times from earlier on. Watford 1, Luton Town 0. And Wycombe Wanderers 0, Swansea 2. Latest scores to hand at the halfway stage. It's goalless between Barnsley and Coventry. Also scoreless between Birmingham and Rotherham and Cardiff and Reading. But there have been goals in the game at Pride Park. Derby County 0, Blackburn Rovers 3. It's Millwall 1, Brentford 1. Preston North End 0, Stoke City 1 and QPR 1, Middlesbrough 1. In Scotland, in the Premiership there, it's Hamilton 0, Dundee United 1, Livingston 2, St Johnston 0 and St Mirren 0, Kilmarnock 1. And in the League of Ireland First Division, Shamrock Rovers 2, goalless. So the Shamrock Rovers 2-0. Strange way of saying it. Well, UCD 4-0 up on them is the best way of saying it. 4-0 to UCD in that match at half-time in the League of Ireland First Division. Report card, Gary, for Liverpool and Man City from what you've seen so far, the top two from last season?
Oh, what's John say that again, mate? Sorry.
Just a report card on what you've seen from Liverpool and City. Like, City were very good in the first half against Wolves. Liverpool, 2-1 on the bounce, obviously helped by Kepa and Christensen last week. But have you been impressed by them? Obviously, Thiago's joined, as the whole world knows.
Yeah, listen, I have, to be perfectly honest. I expect them to be at their high standard again. Obviously, City will be looking to bridge the gap to Liverpool so that the points is not as big as it finished last season. But they're certainly the two to catch. It was, even before that sending off, John, I felt that Chelsea were not really competing that well against Liverpool. I thought Liverpool was strong. I know Frank says about the fact that they could have had a penalty, could have potentially gone to 1-1 and stuff like that, even though they were down to 10 men. But I still think there's a lot of work for Chelsea to do. I genuinely believe that in terms of bridging that gap. I think they will. I think they'll evolve over the coming season. I'm looking forward to seeing how the new guys come in, Ziyech, those type of guys, Pulisic back from injury as well. And of course, how is he going to fit all these players in? You know, they made such a really, really aggressive decision to like to chase Hudson-Odoi down, to get him to sign that contract, to keep him out of the clutches of Bayern Munich. But I just don't see him getting his game there. But in terms of what City are doing, pretty much more of the same. I still feel that I'll be interested to see what business they do as the window approaches, because as we said before, John, I think they need to address that centre-half position. I think Nathan Aké's been a very good signing, but he's not that dominant centre-half that I think they still need to really bridge the gap to Liverpool. But I think all the chasing pack got so much to do to get anywhere near the level of those two guys.
Yeah, City linked this morning with Benfica's Ruben Dias and Sevilla's Jules Koundé.
Yeah.
So they're the latest central defenders they've been linked with. Don't think it's going to happen with Koulibaly. Shane, have you been as impressed as Gary with Liverpool and City so far?
Yeah, I have, John. Definitely, really, really interesting to see what Liverpool did the other night with Fabinho going back to centre half. Because obviously you were looking at the Thiago signing and you were saying, right, really, really great player, but as a unit, that midfield three works so well for Liverpool. You know, how were they going to? What way was that going to alter? Yeah. What way was that going to change? And it's going to be interesting to see, was that just a stopgap? You know, with I think Matip and Gomez were possibly both injured. I think it's more than a stopgap option, John. I really, really do. I think Fabinho has looked really, really well and good anytime he's played right-sided centre-half. And then obviously that does free up the spot then for Thiago just to slide straight in there. And look, he does that role very, very differently than Fabinho. They've got very different strengths and weaknesses. But I think that could be potentially the way they go about it for the rest of the season. I think it's more than just a stopgap because they were down a couple of centre-halves. I think it works for them.
Yeah, and Johnny, they've got Curtis James as well. It's beginning to make an impression.
Yeah, rave reviews. You know, the what they do with the young players will be very, very interesting. Great piece in The Guardian today, actually, about just the evolution of that team and how you have to evolve. And I think Fabinho is the player that will, you know, make that big difference in terms of how they approach the game. There was an interesting stat about Trent Alexander-Arnold's role in the Chelsea game after Fabinho came on, that he did a lot less than you would expect from him. And it'll be interesting to see how the kind of fullbacks dovetail with that, you know, with a player who actually will be able to kind of control a game. But I think Liverpool will be fairly happy. You know, I think Jota's a very good sign and they've lots of strength and depth. I think Salah's going to be refreshed this season. It does look a two-horse race, but I think it's probably closer than, you know, the betting would suggest. I think Liverpool don't have an awful lot to fear from Man City at the moment, but it's going to be a pleasure just watching Thiago. You know, it's a while since they've had a midfielder kind of, you know, of that top calibre, and he's just a pleasure to watch. And, you know, I still don't see that many holes in them. I think the chasing pack just look a little bit behind. I was disappointed in Chelsea, to be honest. I agree with Gary. I thought, as much as it was, obviously, again, the change with the red card, I thought Chelsea didn't do an awful lot at nil-all either.
Yeah, I keep getting Reece James and Curtis Jones mixed up. Must stop that. So Curtis Jones scoring a couple of the other night. Fabinho is centre-half, Gary?
Yeah, and listen, in terms of him slotting back there, you can see what we talked about earlier, John, in terms of the modern demands of a centre-half now, that ability to step into midfield to create those overloads and to give a passing option. And certainly in doing that, doubt about it, can read the situations, looks quite accomplished alongside Van Dijk. I think most centre halves do. The concern for me would be, though, is just with that high Liverpool line, that as a centre midfielder, he doesn't sense danger quick enough, and that if he gets turned, because I don't think he's a flying machine by any stretch of the imagination, certainly not as quick as Gomez. And that's kind of what you got to make the decision, don't you? You know, it's six or one, half dozen the other. If you had a centre half who could do both, step into midfield and is quick on the turn, that's Van Dijk. And we said they're very few and far between. But in terms of trying to get Thiago into that Liverpool midfield, the dynamic, as Shane mentioned, does change. It changes very much. But I think even listening to the coaching staff at Liverpool this week, they've made a determined effort with those recruitments of Thiago and Jota to get away from being predictable. Now, listen, it's all well and good us knowing how Liverpool are going to play as an opposition, but it's another thing trying to stop them. But they're preempting their evolving nature of that team, is that they're going to have to play a different way. And I think we've seen that throughout Jurgen Klopp's tenure at Liverpool, because at times they played a certain way, then they've changed it in terms of being a pressing team as opposed to a counter-attacking team to begin with. So he is constantly evolving, and he's never one as a manager who just has one way of playing. Yeah, there are certain parts of the DNA, his philosophy, that they'll never deviate away from, but he does change tactically, and I think this may be another one of those decisions.
It's Toulouse 6, Exeter 5 in the Champions Cup. Racing have already run Racing into the final. Simon Zebo, Dunica Ryan into the final of the Champions Cup. I've watched about four episodes of All or Nothing, the Spurs one, and I'm kind of finding it hard work, to be honest. But one of the things I did enjoy about it was I thought Mourinho was great with the Dele Alli conversation. I thought he was really, you know, he was encouraging, but he was just kind of saying, look, Dele, you need to work, you know, you have to look at the fact that your consistency is maybe not where it should be. He said it again in the pre-match press conference for this weekend. Dele Alli, to me, is on the way out of Spurs, Gary. Where did it all go wrong?
Well, it's a difficult one, really, because you're right. I think initially when Mourinho comes in, Dele Alli scores four goals in as many games at the beginning. And certainly you're thinking, OK, re-energised and stuff like that. And obviously had a massive reputation that he built since coming from MK Dons. I had obviously seen him at MK Dons when I was being coaching at Peterborough and stuff like that. So I knew he was a fantastic player. But even I was surprised at just how much of an impact he made initially. But the problem is, and it does look like he's a shadow of his former self over the last 18 months. And I'd look at certain reasons why that is the case. I think those hamstring injuries have had impacted on him. Certainly doesn't look like he's moving as fluently as he did before. But there's no doubt when you start hearing your manager questioning your attitude in training, that suggests that he's not doing himself any favours. I think as a player, that's the least you can expect, is you just put a shift in and stuff like that. So I don't know. We've seen fallout with players before under Mourinho. There's been a history of it. Of course there has, but I'll be with you, John. I think that it looks like it's heading that way, that he'll probably go out on loan, because I think Daniel Levy will be reluctant to sell him for a knockdown price if he's not performing at a level that was once seen with him. I certainly don't think they'll want to sell him on the cheap, no doubt.
Have you seen the documentary, lads?
I haven't, no. I'm sure Shane has.
No.
Yeah, John, I downloaded the first, I think I'm about five or six episodes into it now. It was ideal watching for the flight over and back to Moldova, actually, on the phone. I think I was saying before, on the plane across, people were doing one of two things. They were either watching the documentary, or they were reading Champagne Football. It seemed to be one or the other right throughout the plane on the way forward and back, to be honest. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. There are bits and pieces to be got from it. Mourinho is an impressive guy. But look, I suppose similar to the City one, you know, these clubs are never going to sign up to something unless they've got kind of the main editorial power over it. You can be fairly sure Jose was always going to make himself look good in it, wasn't he?
And Daniel Levy.
And Daniel Levy, who, he rubs me up the wrong way now, I have to say.
Yeah. we could talk about that, Shane, on our Spurs podcast. Just on Alli, like, I know there's some players like De Bruyne and Salah that Mourinho got the wrong, called it wrong. He called it wrong with these lads. These guys are turned the best two players in the Premier League probably the last few years. But it seems Ali's got enough chances now. And it's very sad. There's a sadness to it, I find. And maybe he'll resurrect his career somewhere else, but there's a sadness to it for me.
It's not just under Mourinho. He was a non-event, you know, he was a non-event for at least 6 months pretty much under Pochettino as well. So it was, you know, Gary will know better than any of us. You know, there are some people in the world, in management terms, I suppose we call them high maintenance and low maintenance. There are some people in the world who just every time they step over that white line, if regardless of what any manager ever says to them, they will go out and they will naturally give 100% of themselves. And then there's others who need to be coaxed and you know, need to that kind of performance needs to be drawn out of them on a weekly basis. And I think he always fell into that bracket. He really, really did. And so any player who's in that bracket, you're always going to have a question mark on him. Some days they can be the best player on the field, and other days they can be a non-entity. You know, it's pretty much the polar opposite from somebody we were talking about earlier in Seamus Coleman. He's the exact polar opposite. Has he got more ability? Absolutely, undoubtedly. But if you were heading into a big game and your life depended on it, you know, you'd go with that solid fella all day over the guy who kind of turns it on and off.
Well, John Giles was on the show the other night, and he talked about like 100%, giving it 100%. Well, he's got concerns about Gareth Bale's hunger for the match and the game.
Do you have concerns about his mentality, and do you think once it's gone, or can actually Mourinho and Tottenham switch it back on?
Well, it doesn't help Nathan, that the fact that Real Madrid are letting him go for whatever reason, and they're usually the main reason is because he's not playing as well as he can play. Now, I think the manager obviously doesn't fancy him. He's been given a hard time, I think. But at the same time, if a player is really doing his stuff, then you don't let players go of his calibre when he's at his best. Mm. And, you know, he's been there a few years. He's 31. He's made an awful lot of money. And money, in my opinion, can corrupt in any walk of life. But I've seen it, you know, I've seen it so many times. Has he got the hunger to do it? It's usually the hunger. And that would bring you back to Dele Alli. Mourinho's saying, I can't do anything about it. He hasn't got the hunger to do it himself. And I doubt over the last year or two that Dele Alli has had the hunger to do it, Nathan. He got a big contract, and I think it's no coincidence in the game with some players. They get a big contract, and then they stop playing as well as they should be playing. Now, in Gareth Bale, I don't know. I think he's been a good lad. I think when he plays for Wales, which is only once in a blue moon, he's done well. I'd be surprised if he doesn't improve them. But if you're looking for a team to be really going ahead, as Liverpool have done, they're the main ones now. Then let's put it this way: I couldn't see Klopp bringing Gareth Bale in on a loan for a year.
Yeah.
I think Spurs are all over the place in what they need to do to challenge these big clubs.
I'm excited about Gareth Bale joining Spurs. It'll be like Ozzy Ardiles days again. It'll be 6-5 and it'll be great. But Johnny, are you excited to see Bale back in the Premier League? He's going to give us some moments if he stays fit, but that's the big imponderable.
But it's just a classic kind of, you know, stupid knee-jerk signing by Jose, is it not? I mean, where's the long-term logic of signing this lad on a massive... You know, where's the upside to this, really, apart from the fact that, obviously, it's going to be good for the brand and all that? Like, I don't see it. I mean, he's aging. He's had a very checkered time at Real Madrid. You'd have to question his attitude to an extent. I think it's crazy stuff. Can you imagine Jurgen Klopp being offered Gareth Bale? He'd run a mile.
Gary?
And listen, I think even Gareth Bale has said, don't expect him to be the player who was running up and down the wing when he was initially at Tottenham. I think we all know that. And you would hope that the hunger is kind of there again because he has played so little football that it will be burning bright again, that he's in a club that he's familiar with as such. In terms of the decision of Jose Mourinho to get him in here, I think it is one that's to do with the brand. I do believe that. I think that Gareth Bale coming to Tottenham will be help the likes of Daniel Levy in terms of what he's trying to achieve. A frustration for him will be, but there's no crowds, because I think as soon as that first game Gareth Bale turns up, I don't think you'll be able to get it. I think it'll be one of the hottest tickets in town for Tottenham to go and watch them. But even in terms of Jose talking about the hunger, and obviously Johnny Giles saying about when you get big contracts, you lose it. Well, If you're that type of player, then like Frank Lampard, he'd have had big contracts. We never seemed to lose his hunger for playing all the time, did he, in terms of putting that hard work in? But I also think as well, John, I think it's sometimes it's a stick with which to beat Mourinho with the likes of Salah, Lukaku, De Bruyne, that they didn't make it at Chelsea. But the reality is the players that they were at Chelsea at that time are nowhere near the players that they are now. And put that also with the fact how good a team Chelsea were then, that they couldn't force their way in. So I think you have to give it some context in terms of why those players didn't make it there. But there's no doubt, I think, and Shane, you'll know this as a coach, you know when a player's not really having you as a coach or as a manager, and likewise, you know as a player when the manager doesn't really fancy you anymore. Or you know, no matter how hard you work, you know it's never really going to happen. And I think that relationship between both Dele Alli and Mourinho looks like it's possibly going that way, despite Mourinho saying that he expects him to be here for the season.
John, what would worry me is obviously you're like, we're two Spurs men. We're hoping and praying that Bale is, you know, if he's even 80% of what we had the last time round, you know, what an absolutely fantastic addition it would be. And you can pretty much just completely discount anything in terms of what he's done or failed to do at Madrid over the last 12 months. My concern would be, you haven't seen a reasonable amount of the Welsh internationals last month, or earlier this month even. I didn't think he was great. Jeez, I really didn't think he was great. I thought he was, you know, very much a shadow of his former self. But look, maybe again that was to do with his club surroundings, and I really, really hope Jose is able to light a fire under him.
Yeah, he's got to be fit. I think he's not fit at the moment, but I suppose the one player that we don't talk about with Spurs is the best player in the Spurs squad is Son. Son is a sensational player, scored 4 goals last week. A smile on his face all the time, has played in big matches, scored in big matches, Champions League. Great player, the most famous sportsman in South Korea. And I sometimes think he gets a little bit not noticed as much as he should, with Harry Kane being, you know, such an England stalwart. And
well, even Mourinho, did you see that, John? When he's getting his man, like he's interviewing after the game, just scored 4 goals, and Mourinho leans into the camera and says, "You weren't man of the match, though. Harry Kane was." And he's looking at him thinking, "You're joking me."
It's brand. It's all brand. I think maybe I got a sense they're looking to try and sell Spurs, is what the sense I'm trying to get, that they might be looking to sell the club. And Spurs need to get in the Champions League. As Johnny says, it's short term. It's get that team into the top four. The documentary's out now. We'll get the Champions League money, or we'll get even win the Europa League to get in there. There's a bit of short-termism, which is obviously anti-everything that Mauricio Pochettino was about. Spurs fans, you've got a view on it, 53106. We got to take a break now. Speak about Luis Suarez, Barcelona, the return of La Liga, Dundalk, and your sporting heroes after this. You're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock in the company of the former Republic of Ireland defender Gary Breen, the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward, and the Dundalk coach Shane Keegan. Our football coverage brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunluie.net. Just to go through the world of sport and the scores around the boards. In the Premier League, Everton still 2-1 up away to Crystal Palace midway through the second half. Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison on the mark for the Toffees. Earlier on, Manchester United beat Brighton by 3-2. Bruno Fernandes scoring effectively with the last kick of the game, a penalty. And the Championship, it has finished. Watford 1, Luton 0. And full-time Wickham 0, Swansea City 2. Latest scores to hand in the Championship. Barnsley 0, Coventry 0. It's Birmingham 0, Rotherham 0. It's Cardiff 0, Reading 2. Derby County 3-0 down at home to Blackburn Rovers. It's Millwall 1, Brentford 1. Preston 0, Stoke 1, and QPR 1, Middlesbrough 1 in the Championship. In Scotland, it's Hamilton 0, Dundee United 1, Livingston 2, St Johnstone 0, and St Mirren 0, Kilmarnock 1. It's Shamrock Rovers 2-2, UCD 5 in the League of Ireland First Division. In the Champions Cup Rugby, Simon Zeebo and Donnacha Ryan into the final, because Racing 92 won earlier on, 19 points to 15 against Saracens. At the moment, it's Exeter 14 to lose 11 at halftime. And in the Irish Open Golf, up at Galgorm Castle in Ballymena, Jazz Jane Wattenanand from Thailand is 7 under par, alongside Maverick Antcliffe and Aaron Rye, with Dean Burmester on 6 under, and then a load of players on 4 under par. No Irish in contention at the Irish Open. Just a quote from Lionel Messi on his Instagram page yesterday, lads, about Luis Suarez. "You deserved a farewell fitting of who you are, one of the most important players in the history of the club. Not to be kicked out like you were, but the truth is, by now, nothing surprises me." Who wants to take that? Lionel Messi is a hostage at Barcelona, it seems, at the moment.
Yeah, relations certainly don't seem to be good there, do they? Look, I know he was going and now he's staying, but I don't know. He's not a happy boy, and you'd wonder how much of a focus is going to be there. Are we going to get the same? Lionel Messi playing at 50% motivation is probably better than 99% for the footballers in the world. But you'd wonder if we're going to see the same Messi there this year. I'd just love to see a change. I'd love to see somebody come in and take him away. It'd be fantastic before he finishes up to see him just operate in a different league for a season or two, wouldn't it?
Ah, brilliant. Yeah, it would be great to see him in the Premier League.
That's for sure.
Luis Suarez to Atletico Madrid, Gary. That's, as Graham Hunter called it, a match made in heaven.
Wow. Can you imagine as a centre-half playing against Suarez and Diego Costa, the dark arts that they both have? I think you'd be black and blue coming off that pitch after that.
Oh, it's great stuff.
But there's no doubt. I think he believes he can still play at that level. And he obviously was broken-hearted to leave Barcelona, bearing in mind 198 goals in, 283 games. So you look at the scenario now and you think, well, Atletico Madrid, it'd be interesting, certainly in terms of how aggressive they are as a team. Their manager, I think he probably will fit in there. It'll be interesting to see just how prolific he is there. But he was definitely part of that front three of with Messi and Neymar, where Barcelona seemed to have a real plan in terms of what they were trying to achieve. And it looked like everyone was pulling in the same way. Over the last 2 or 3 years with their recruitment, it doesn't look like it's a natural fit in anything they do. They're just trying to buy the biggest and best players they can find with Griezmann, Dembele, and it just doesn't look like it just doesn't look like there's a real understanding of what they're trying to achieve. And that's probably why Messi is being so vocal. But I'm the opposite. I although I'd love to see him in the Premier League, I think Messi's synonymous with Barcelona. I find it very difficult to see him in another shirt.
Gary, isn't it mad though how Barcelona have essentially turned into Real Madrid? Like what you've just described there as Barcelona is what Real Madrid were. I mean, when Barca were the kingpins, obviously the reason they rose so well was because of their ability to produce their own players and all that. And while they were producing their own players from their own academy, Real were the ones who were just, you know, ridiculously throwing money around and bringing these huge names. And, you know, Barcelona had this whole thing of, you know, how pure they were compared to Real, and now they are Real.
Let's just hear from Shamrock Rovers playmaker Jack Byrne. He was on the show during the week, joined Joe Malloy, saying that Paul Scholes was the player he modelled himself on growing up.
Is there anybody that you did or do model yourself on at times?
Well, always growing up, like Paul Scholes, always, you know, loved watching him play. I don't model myself on him because I've moved higher up the pitch now. I play in the number 10 position, but when I first went over to England, I used to play in front of the back four, and that first year in Holland, I would have played, you know, a lot of time in midfield, building from the back and through the towards. Mm. So I always enjoyed watching Paul Scholes' performances. I just thought he was unbelievable. He never gave a pass away, and it was never the safety option as well with him. He was always trying. He was always, you know, trying to find the killer pass. And I just thought, even towards, I remember going to watch a game. I think there's, you know, always a piece going around about when Scholes played this game against Man City, when his fourth game after a tournament, when he had the fake boots on, and he went to Sports Direct or something and got a pair of fake boots and went down to play the game. And I don't think he gave the ball away. He was unbelievable. I was in the Etihad watching the game. And I remember coming away from the game thinking, this fella is a different level. I don't think he made a tackle. Don't think he made a header. He was just everywhere. He was just there in front of everyone. So that's probably my favourite player watching when I was growing up was Paul Scholes. And still to this day, you get him up on the old YouTube. But it's in black and white.
we're all getting old. Did you ever get along to Old Trafford when you were in Manchester to watch him? Or was that like, would that be dangerous territory to sneak along?
Do you know, I used to try and get some of the Champions League games if they were playing. Like, you know, sometimes you get to see them, you know, some of my family would be United fans, and they'd go over and watch the games and just tag along with them for something to do. And I actually went and I used to go and watch a lot of the reserve team games, and Old Trafford, watch Derek Williams and Robbie Brady play against each other. One time I was there with Graham, and I think there was a few of them playing on the pitch that day. Samir Carruthers, Graham Bourke, Derek Williams, Robbie Brady, I think Grealish might have played. So there was some good players and players that we've been playing with throughout the age groups. And when they're playing on your doorstep, you'll always go and, you know, see how they're getting on, and, you know, offer a bit of support if you can, because it's probably only a few of us over there.
Yeah, good to hear Jack Byrne on the show with Joe Malloy during the week. If you want to check that out, the podcast or the full interview on the new OTB Sports app, download that now. Gary, who did you model yourself on growing up? For Jack Byrne, it was Paul Scholes. Who was he for yourself?
Well, I don't know about modelling myself on anyone, because there was no one who was about 6'3" and as skinny as I was to be trying to aspire to. But certainly growing up as an Arsenal fan in North London, Liam Brady was a massive hero of mine, watching him play. But then obviously when you get a little bit older, my hero, I've been well documented about this, Paul McGrath was my hero, but there's no way I could ever model myself on him. He's a giant of a centre-half. And it's incredible now when you listen to people of a younger generation, say anyone who's up to about age of 20, 21, who never really saw Paul McGrath playing, but yet here everyone talk so highly about him, what a great player he was. He was probably, if you're trying to compare him, you're thinking about someone like Van Dijk in terms of that physical presence, just an absolute brilliant athlete. Yeah, he was able to perform the way he did, not only at centre-back, but also in centre-midfield, with knees that were completely shot. he was an incredible footballer. And certainly as when you're growing up and you meet your heroes and stuff like that, such a lovely man, a quiet, unassuming man, Paul McGrath really was, but what a centre-half. I'd argue to this day with anyone that he's probably one of the best centre-halves we've ever seen. Not in Ireland, in the world.
I love listening to that, JD. And it, like what Gary says there is so on the ball. Like Paul McGrath is a lot of people's favourite player who probably never saw him play. Because of, and also Gary, the fact that, you know, you referenced his ability. I'm fortunate enough that I'm too young to actually really remember him playing when he was like maybe in his heyday. But what was his best position? Because I've seen clips where it looked like he could have been like an all-around midfielder. I remember him as a centre-back. I remember obviously Italia, I remember 94 or the US 94 when I think he was 35 then and he's taken on Signori and his shoulders in bits and his knees were in bits and he's still man of the match. But like, what was his best position? And I can see why you modelled yourself on him, obviously.
Well, I didn't model, no, John. I did not model myself on him because it's impossible. It's ridiculous.
I wanted to model yourself on him anyway.
Yeah, oh yes. Listen, if I could pick anyone to model myself on, it would have been him, no doubt about that. But you're right, John. Even when he was like really coming towards the end of his career, he went to Derby County, and one of my good friends there, Christian Daly, was a young centre-half there. And he told me after about 3 weeks, even in training, he still hadn't seen Paul McGrath give the ball away in a game or in training. And this was a centre-half, like, and incredible. Then another one as well, which Shay was telling me once, he took a goal kick when he was playing for Newcastle and he knocked it up to the halfway line and Paul McGrath headed it and it went straight back into Shay's hands without bouncing. It was an unbelievable player. And even that Italian game, I have never watched that back because I don't want to spoil it. I know it was magnificent, but in my mind now, he's about 10 foot tall. He's blocked shots, about 30 shots on the line. He's just been an unbelievable performance. But when you get someone like Franco Baresi, who's arguably one of the best ever centre-backs we've ever seen, and in terms of what centre-backs are trying to do now, that high line, Franco Baresi and AC Milan defence were unbelievable at pressing and condensing that midfield. In, you know, Italian football had never seen it before, a team play 4-4-2 and play such a high line like that. If Franco Baresi turns around and says Paul McGrath is the best centre-half in the world, or is there any higher accolade than that?
Well, with Virgil van Dijk winning Premier League Player of the Year last year, he became, you see, obviously, as you say, younger people wouldn't realise this. Like, Virgil van Dijk is only the third centre-half ever to win Premier League Player of the Year after John Terry and Paul McGrath. So again, look, I mean, you know, he was a different style of player, but he was certainly the Virgil van Dijk of his day in Premier League terms, you know.
It's just as well that, you know, I did a piece there not that long ago with Mikey Place, who came from a kind of an interesting background from foster homes and stuff like that, and son of an immigrant. And, you know, what I think Paul McGrath was ahead of his time in terms of his background, because all of these, the amount of young Irish players now coming from sons of immigrant type backgrounds. Even I was at the Galway United Cavan Teely game the other night, and we had three players in the pitch who had massive roles to play, who kind of come from not the conventional Irish background that I would have come from. And, you know, we're going to be so much richer for, but that was part of the tapestry of Paul McGrath. He had a kind of an underdog background. He had his own kind of personal issues off the pitch, and that's partly why we loved him. But even if he were like Rolls Royce off the pitch and on it, he was my favourite player of all time. I'll never grow tired of watching videos of him or whatever.
Yeah. JD, just going back to what Jack was saying, you know, particularly when I almost forgot that he was initially at City, but when he talks about that when he was over there as a kid, that he was, you know, he was playing that bit deeper, and that's why he was modelling himself on Scholes. I mean, I don't know, have any of the three of you seen much of Joe Hodge over at City yet?
No,
just
not
a little
not
bit,
yet,
yeah.
No.
Like, I'm telling you, we know all the furore over Jack Grealish and over Declan Rice. I'm telling you now, if we were to lose Joe Hodge, I'm telling you now, I reckon it would be a bigger loss than either of the two of them. The guy is absolutely fantastic. He won Manchester City Academy, what do they call it? Manchester City Scholar of the Year this year. He got that during the summer. He is everything Irish football needs right now, and seems to be at the moment. He's 100%, you know, focused on Ireland and has been fantastic for Ireland's underage sides. But you're just, I suppose, we're preconditioned at this stage after what's happened with the other two to be so fearful as to whether he'll actually end up being a full senior international. But I'll tell you, if he is, just keep a watch out for him over the next while. What a footballer in that style. Just goes, picks it up off the back four, kind of half Xavi, half Iniesta. And I think he, you know, he's definitely, definitely one for us over the next few years.
I think Shane knows his young players as well, because this is a measure of the man, JD. This is a measure of the all-round greatness that you're dealing with here today. Not only is he pivotal in bringing along these two Italians along this amazing journey, reviving Dundalk from a position where their season is going to derail to a position where they're really close to getting into the Europa League group stages, but the following evening, after going to this enclave that doesn't exist in the eyes of many people, Transnistria, he's trying to get involved with the Leash Miners. But he's abandoned because he can't, because of COVID regulations. So he goes from bringing Dundalk on the cusp of Europa League glory to wanting to get involved that night with the Leash Miners, but told because of COVID regulations. This is Shane Keegan.
We got three greats on the show here. We got Shane Keegan, we got Johnny Ward, we got Gary Breen. We got them all on the show here this afternoon on Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. Gary, when you first met Paul McGrath, were you nervous?
Oh, well, listen, when I met all that generation, when I first got into the squad, I was a nervous wreck. I think I was voted worst trainer because, John, you've got to understand, like, these are your heroes. And suddenly I'm playing football, get my head up, and I'm looking around at Andy Townsend, Paul McGrath, Ray Houghton, these type of guys. It was so, so difficult for me to detach from them being to my heroes. Listen, when a game started, it was fine. But in training, in and around the hotel, very difficult. But the first time I ever met Paul McGrath was I was an under-18 being called up to the under-21 squad. And I was in my hotel room, and I would be so nervous, and I was quite shy then when I was a younger kid. And there's a knock at my hotel door. So I look through the spy hole, and it's Paul McGrath. And I just thought, what? I don't even know what's happening here. So I sheepishly opened the door, and Paul goes to me, "Sorry, Gary, to disturb you." He was so polite. "Sorry to disturb you. But would you mind?" And I'm thinking, what is he going to ask me? "Would you mind if I have... your long sleeve number 5 shirt?" Because what you get when you play for the seniors or the under 21s or for Ireland, you get, what you used to get, one short sleeve shirt, one long sleeve shirt. So it's up to you what number. So I obviously had the number 5 for the under 21s. He had the number 5 for the seniors. But he liked to wear, if you remember, Paul McGrath always wore the long sleeve shirts, didn't he? So he liked to have the two of them. So he said to me, "Gary, can I have that? And I'll give you, I'll give you the short sleeve one." And I was so cheeky. This was so unlike me. I said, "Yeah, you can have it, Paul, as long as you sign it for me." So he signs it, and that is still the best shirt I ever got. Forget about all the players that I swapped shirts with in the Premier League or whatever, or in international football. Although, having said that, I didn't really swap many Ireland shirts because they meant too much to me to swap them to anyone else. But that is still pride of place of all the shirts I have, Paul McGrath's signed Ireland shirt.
What a story. What a great story, Gary. Brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff. 53106, they show the 85 Cup final. Again, over lockdown, McGrath was superb, even better than my hero, Whiteside. That is from Aaron. McGrath won man of the match in that game for Manchester United against Everton. Won the FA Cup final at 100,000 at Wembley when it was a massive game. And this is before even the Jack era, when he was the star, as we said, of USA 94 against Italy. But also in Italian 90, he was brilliant. In Euro 88, he had that header against the post against the Dutch. And I also, you know, he's just a person, as Johnny very well summarised there. He's very much a loved member of the Irish sporting community. Like, it's even funny, if I don't know if you've got time on 53106, listeners, if you want to like text in your sport, your football hero growing up, who was your idol, who's your hero, who did you model yourself on? It might be somebody from left field. I get the sense from you as also Paul McGrath, Johnny. If you want to correct me, Shane, who was for me, it was Hoddle, Glenn Hoddle. But because it was as a Spurs fan, as a young Spurs fan, was it the same for you, or was it somebody else?
Yeah, I suppose I've a few years on you in terms of youth, JD. So for me, it was probably more, I was more of the Gaza, Gary Lineker era, really. They were the two that were our big names at the time, and two, probably Chris Waddle as well. They were the three big names for Spurs at the time that I would have really, really loved, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We got Crystal Palace and Everton coming towards full-time in the Premier League. Let's get an update. Mike Lawrence.
Crystal Palace 1, Everton 2. The home side have just been enjoying a little spell of dominance as they look to get back into the game. They're pushing the visitors back into their own half and frustrating them into giving away free kicks in dangerous areas. But as it is, Palace still trail, with Charleston's penalty putting Everton back in front just before half-time after Cech Coyarte cancelled out Dominic Calvert-Lewin's early goal. Crystal Palace 1, Everton 2.
You've got team news as well from the West Brom-Chelsea match. Kick off at 5:30, Dave Eason.
The big change is in goal for Chelsea. Willy Caballero starts between the sticks. Kepa is on the bench while Eduard Mendy is not yet ready to play. Thiago Silva gets his Premier League debut as Chelsea captain, in for Kurt Zouma. Tammy Abraham starts as well, with Jorginho on the bench. West Brom make one enforced change with Kieran Gibbs suspended. Connor Townsend comes in for his Premier League debut. At the Hawthorns, it's West Brom against Chelsea.
Yeah, Darragh O'Shea still in that West Brom team, has started every game so far in the Premier League this season. Callum Robinson also starting up front. Bad though for Kepa that if Willy Caballero is playing, that's not good for Kepa.
I think it was inevitable, wasn't it, to be perfectly honest, because it's not even a mistake against Liverpool. He should have saved that strike against Brighton as well. So it's a difficult one. Obviously, as a manager, Shane would tell you that you want to try and motivate the players to make them feel that they're still part of it, that they can still turn it around. But in the background, you can see the club manoeuvring, making a signing, and the fact that he's come in now and he's not ready to play. I think Frank Lampard said it was too quick a turnaround to get him ready for today's game, but I'm not surprised that Caballero's got the nod.
Yeah, great. Great some text coming in here. Just Gary's story about getting Paul McGrath to sign the swap top is one of the best stories ever. Short, but so memorable. Quality on 5-3-1-0-6. Gary's been very polite about how good Paul was. I remember how good Gary was in his goal in Rotterdam versus Holland in front of the travelling fans. No free bar. Thanks, Gary, for your service and to Ireland. That is from Dave in Bray.
Thank you very much. It was an absolute dream come true.
Yeah, hi lads, listening about the truly great legend Paul McGrath brings back some fantastic memories, but there was another truly great centre half of years gone by, the Cork United, Cork Athletic and Evergreen legend Flory Burke of the 40s and early 50s, and arguably, along with Paddy Coad, the best player of his generation. That is from Ed Burke in Cork. Thanks for texting in, Ed, on 53106. Shane Keegan, have you got your Faroe Islands research done for Thursday?
Probably only starting to deep dive now this evening, to be honest, John. We have a game tomorrow night. So I was up in Dundalk this morning presenting on Shamrock Rovers because we
How
can't
would you
afford
get on with that, actually.
The what?
How would you get on with Shamrock Rovers? Are they any use?
They're not too bad with the ball, all right, Johnny. Yeah. No, look, that's a big one for us tomorrow night, first and foremost, so it is. So really kind of jumping into it tonight, John. I mean, if I was to throw a couple of bits and pieces out from the small bits I have seen or the numbers that I've looked at, I mean, remarkably, they won the game 6-1 on Thursday night with 29% possession. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen that pulled off before. So I haven't. But they're frequent high scorers. They played three games in August. Granted, the domestic league isn't wonderful there, but in their three games in August, they won 5-0, 6-0 and 7-0. So they're certainly free scoring when you add in that European result the other night. So, look, this is far, far, far from a foregone conclusion. It's a fantastic opportunity for us. I mean, when you think about it, John, you know, we have an opportunity to sit down on Friday morning and turn on UEFA.com and watch a group stage draw. You know, out of the hat comes Dundalk, followed by whatever, Tottenham Hotspur, followed by Celtic. That's what we could be looking forward to in October, November and December if we were to get things right.
Just on that as well, Shane, like there's probably, I imagine, among you guys, a massive need to, as much as these players are so grounded, when you think that Chris Shields is out, and the midfield has had so much upheaval for the last sort of, I don't know, year, if even. Chris Shields is out, who's a massive player in a game like that. And there are just little things that, you know, will give them hope as well.
Yep, 100%. Look, I think anybody in the Dundalk setup will admit how big of a loss he was in the FAI Cup final last year. It kind of completely disrupted Dundalk's normal flow. Shields is arguably the first name on the team sheet there, really. So he is over the last 3-4 years. So there's a, you know, a question mark for us to solve in that respect. And look, as I say, genuinely, it's not a case of you know, trying to talk the talk so as you keep lads focused. It's going to be a really, really, really tough game. You know, arguably a 50-50 kind of a game, really, so it is. But in terms of one game to go before making a Europa group stages, you'd take a 50-50 game all day long when you look at the strength of some of the other sides we could have faced, you know.
And it could be very lucrative, Shane, as well. Worth a lot of money.
Yeah, worth a lot of money, that's for sure. And look, given how strong Rovers have looked this year and given that they're going to be the ones who are potentially going to have the opportunity to go Champions League next year, you know, Dundalk need to make that money while they have it, because they're going to need every penny they can get their hands on to try and be competitive with Rovers over the next 5-10 years, when you look at Dermot Desmond arriving on the scene there at Rovers as well. So, yeah, look, again, as I say, fantastic opportunity. I'd really, really hope that domestically the whole league gets behind the team next Thursday night. I would be hoping and praying that it's going to be shown on national television. I certainly would hope so. And look, I think, you know, there might even be a few Shamrock Rovers fans who might get behind us. You'd never know.
What are the Italian guys like, Shane? I know you've kind of gone over this before, but are you the bridge between them and this kind of mad league that they knew nothing about?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough to say. And you know, that's why I'm enjoying it so much is, you know, there was, let's be perfectly honest, there probably wasn't a huge amount I could add to the setup under the previous setup, because you had, you know, you had Vinny, who obviously knew the league inside out. You had John Gill, you had Alan Reynolds. I mean, you know, there was a massive, you know, bank of knowledge there. Whereas obviously with Filippo and Giuseppe, they don't know the league. And, you know, even their knowledge of our own players is it's very, very good, in fairness to them. They must have watched a hell of a lot of video, because they knew the players quite well in terms of our own setup. But yeah, there's an awful lot more for me to do, I suppose, under the current setup. And whereas I probably never had to open my mouth in the dressing room before. In fact, I wasn't even in the dressing room a lot of the time, because I was at opposition games. Whereas now I'm in the, and look, obviously enough, particularly when you get results like Thursday night, it's really enjoyable. But Filippo has been an impressive guy. I think he's impressed everybody with the any of the interviews that he's done so far. A really, really kind of confident, sure of himself, real man of conviction, determined that Dundalk are going to keep the ball as much as possible. And it's been good to learn a couple of things off him.
Okay, guys, we got to leave it there. Just a text to finish. Hi, guys. Great to be listening in. Just to say, Gary Breen, a rock when he played for Sunderland. I hope Gary won't ever forget his time there. From John and Cork. Thanks so much for today, Gary, Johnny and Shane.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Cheers, Gary.
Okay, this has been Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Don't forget, tomorrow we have two live and exclusive commentary games from the Premier League on Off the Ball. News Talk from 1 until 7. Joe Malloy in the chair will bring you the Sunday paper review first, with Grainne McIlwain and Rory O'Connor, and then two live and exclusive Premier League games. Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr in the commentary box for Tottenham Hotspur's match against Newcastle United. Then Dave McIntyre and Kenny Cunningham will call the shots for the game between Manchester City and Leicester City. If you missed our Saturday panel discussion on the future of Irish cycling with Martin Irvine, Brian Nugent and Eve McChrystal, or our football chat with Gary Breen, Shane Keegan and Johnny Ward, you can find the podcasts of them on the brand new OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download the app for iOS and Android, or check out the content wherever you get your pods. Thanks so much for listening this afternoon. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power.
Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.